T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I really can't answer that, Rich. I'm not going to go through a dissertation like that, Rich. That's a question I'm not going to answer, Rich.
Rich Campbell.
It's a piece of the pie you got to fight for up here. We got to get the shovel out and get to the bottom of things the way it's supposed to be.
Covering the Bears for the Chicago Tribune.
When you look at the Lions game at home last year, obviously one of the most positive moments for Mitch. Anything you're taking away from that in contrast that you can seize on to try to, you know, duplicate or at least put that bullseye out there?
You go back and you watch that game on tape and you see, man, we did a lot of good things. That's been like the biggest thing that you fight, trying to figure out that why.
Rich Campbell with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Zappolis and Associates in Mokena. Spieg's in for Mac. Mac will be back tomorrow. Rich Campbell joins us on Wednesdays at 4 o'clock on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, the day after Mitch Trubisky and Matt Nagy meet the media at Hallis Hall. Rich, this team is a quote machine. My God, are they making your life interesting these days, aren't they?
Yeah, it was a lot more fun to follow when they won. But I'll give these guys a lot of credit that they don't take a lot of this criticism personally. They are accountable, you know, some of them outwardly in a way that is really, I think, attractive. It's colorful. It's real. You know, these guys are feeling the pain of this season. And, you know, that example starts with Matt, that he has never really taken the criticism personally. I think he understands that it's part of the job, but certainly you can feel from him the push forward, the frustration, that the offense just isn't what they thought it would be, isn't what it was a year ago. You heard in the hit, the clip at the top of the hit here about the Lions game last year. I mean, that was one of Mitch's best games. They were ripping off passes of 20, 30, 40 yards repeatedly in that game. And one of those moments where you would go, that's what this offense is supposed to look like. And I was just kind of wondering, talking to them this morning, when they are watching this, are they even recognizing themselves? Because it's just so different now, so much worse.
You know, I wondered, Rich, as Mitch Trubisky was talking about wanting to have the TVs turned off, if he's allowed to turn them off himself, or maybe he just can't reach. I don't know if there's a logistical issue. But does he realize, does he care, does Matt Nagy realize, does he care that when the stuff like, I was told not to talk about last week's game, and now I need to turn off the TV because they're telling us what we should do and they don't know us. That stuff sounds really, really off-putting to the majority of fans.
I'm trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off.
Do they know? Do they care that it sounds, frankly, like kind of soft and off-putting to the majority of fans?
Can't someone find Mitch a remote?
That's what I mean. I was going to say, Spies, they have this invention now called a remote control. I think he doesn't have to be tall to reach up in the corner there.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he said that today, I thought back to is that a lot of teams, their public relations department, every morning, I know this because I was an intern in the Redskins PR department in 2002, and that what you do is you go in and you gather all the newspapers, everything that was written about the team that morning, and you put it in a packet. Now it's all electronic. You put it in a PDF packet, and you distribute it throughout the building so everybody in the building has an idea of what the coverage is. And, you know, I was thinking a couple days ago, I was like, you know, I wonder if the Bears are still doing that because of the head coach's declaration that they should have blinders and earmuffs on. Like, that would not serve their purpose at all to disseminate the coverage throughout the building. And so when Mitch said, I'm trying to get some of these TVs turned off, you guys know how it is. Anytime you're in a sports bar, you have NFL Network on in the background. Where you're in a football building, that you occasionally get some highlights on TV. It's an attractive thing to have on. But I think Mitch's point is, you know, wait a minute, let's completely bunker in here, close the blinds, you know, shut the door, lock it. So I get what he's saying there. I also get what you're saying about, look, you should be able to rise above it. Just because the TV is on doesn't mean you have to listen to it. So maybe there's a little bit more of a symbolism to that than actual practicality about, you know, getting warped sideways because someone's yapping on NFL Network about how bad the offense is or what the play calling is or whether Trubisky is not living up to expectations. But I do think from a symbolic standpoint, and a, you know, if they want to turn inward, and not that they've made it an us against the world type thing, but if they want to bunker down and say, look, we've got each other, we're in, you know, these four walls, and it's only us that can bring us out of it, no matter what anyone else says, it's not going to affect us one way or another. I get that. It's a way to process all the scrutiny and criticism that's going on right now. But ultimately, regardless of what is said on Wednesday, whether he handles it brilliantly or whether he comes off as soft or unprepared or whatever, they've just got to win. He's just got to play better. He's got to throw on time and find open receivers and find ways to get him out of bad play calls and do the eraser thing that the Bears drafted him to do.
Rich, I believe that Matt Nagy has been put in a position to defend the indefensible. I always say when these athletes and coaches are talking to the media, you know, that I'm very skeptical of it. I go with actions over words. Do you actually believe that they believe, Matt Nagy and the other players, that Mitch Trubisky is salvageable?
Salvageable in what way?
That he is salvageable. The quarterback of the future of the Chicago Bears.
I don't think that from the evidence we have seen, they can believe that without some kind of leap of faith. That if you are really a see-it-to-believe-it person, that his performance has not been consistent enough to say, I believe it, we know we're going there because we've seen it. The one word I would use to describe Mitch's play through three, you know, 2.5 seasons, the one word that I think best sums it up is inconsistent, because there are some flashes. And so when people say that, you understand what they are seeing. But the body of work is big enough right now. And I think you see this in the post-game locker room on a week-to-week basis. You understand some of the feel and the psyche of just from being around the team on a daily basis that there is doubt about whether he can do it. I'm 100% with you, Danny, that you have to take actions over any words. And, you know, we're standing at Taylor Gabriel's locker today, and he was brilliantly articulating this faith in Mitch that the locker room has. It was, you know, terrific quotes. He was saying it, you know, powerfully. And, you know, the other part of me, while appreciating him saying that, is thinking, what else is he going to say? I mean, even if he, you know, if he believes it, he doesn't believe it, you have to say one thing. The beauty of all of this is that the actions and the results play out for us in an unscripted way every Sunday. And so far, that body of work that goes back to 2017 is not consistent enough to fully stamp that Mitch is the quarterback of the future, the guy who's going to sustain success for this team.
Rich, Taylor Gabriel with an amazing quote in your game story from Sunday, your column from Sunday, talking about the failure of the entire team, but really the failure of the offense. Gabriel, quote, "It's heartbreaking and crushing to this locker room," unquote. And Danny and I were talking as we watched the game together, actually, on Sunday, about how if a defense feels any of that kind of heartbreak and crush that Gabriel is admitting to right there, that a defense can lose that little bit of edge that separates great athletes from each other. They can lose that collective confidence and ferocity. And I feel like I see that with this defense. Is that conceivable?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to the point of, you know, how much do we take folks at their word? I mean, I'm giving you we have two different Taylor Gabriel quotes right here, right? The one I'm talking today about him believing in it. And then the one that to me is a little more raw. You know, the emotion is pulsating when they come back into a locker room there and you get a very real reflection. I mean, that feeling of heartbreak. I mean, that what a powerful word. And so there is no question that you need positive results to foster the confidence it becomes a cycle, you know, positively or negatively. Right now, it's a negative cycle for the Bears. How they break out of it, they'll just say, look, we're working and we rely on the dedication of our work to get us through mentally. But this is only natural. I mean, it's only natural for a defense to let down, you know, when they have just been on the field, you know, six plays, 75 yards in the opening drive against the Saints, blow a coverage, and then they have to go back out there after one play when David Montgomery fumbles, that these guys, it's only natural. I mean, just, you know, are you kidding me? We're back out there. So, yeah, I mean, the one play that stands out to me, and you guys can go back and watch this, is Eddie Jackson on Jordan Howard's 13-yard touchdown run to make it 19-0 early in the second half on Sunday. Jackson does not approach that tackle with the type of physical ability that he has. And you just look at that and say, that's where the edge is lost. To me, that was an example of exactly what you're talking about. You know, you see uncharacteristic things from guys, play that is just sloppier than normal, and you understand how the weight of failure compounds itself and becomes a tougher pile of rubble to climb out from under.
Bears beat reporter for the Tribune, Rich Campbell, with us. McNeil and Parkins on the score. Spiegs in for Mac. Matt Nagy today admitted that Trey Burton is still not 100%. Should he be playing?
He's not producing right now. The question would be, is Trey Burton at whatever percentage he is better than the alternative at whatever percentage they are? And the alternative is Ben Broniker. So, to me, Broniker is not an offensive contributor. I mean, it's been proven through the Packers game, the Broncos game, you know, last season when he's had to do it. He's not a contributor offensively. So where does that leave you? I mean, they are so undermanned at that tight end position. All the numbers back this up. You know, Nagy was asked today about the need to get more out of the position. It's been a common theme this year. And they've got Adam Shaheen in a role that he has not even come close to mastering, this Y tight end role. It is such a problem for them. I'm not sure benching Trey to get him well will help them. I don't think you're suddenly going to find production with Ben Broniker. So until Trey proves otherwise, it's sort of a rock and a hard place type deal for them.
These Lions are a get healthy defense, Rich. This is a defense that's giving up 424 yards per game, 288 passing yards per game. They've scored 24 points in five of their last six, but they're 2-4 in those six. I mean, this, just like last year, is it out of the realm of possibility that the Bears look good offensively at home against Detroit this Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, as we look ahead to the game, you can ask yourself, okay, what does a win mean? What does a loss mean? But then within each of those, you've got to talk about the brand of winning and the brand of losing. You know, how does it look? So if they win, if they win and it requires, let's say, like the Thanksgiving game at Detroit last year, if they win but it requires an Eddie Jackson pick six to win and overcome the fact that the offense doesn't score 20 again, then how do you feel about it? Do you just go, these are two kind of lousy teams and the Bears get a win, but really their schedule stacks up in a way that is not going to be this favorable the rest of the way and they're headed towards 6-10? Or does Mitch go play the same type of game he played against the Lions at home last year? And then we start talking about the possibility of, is this a spark? Is this something where, you know, a quarterback whose confidence is a real issue, maybe this heals that a little bit? That's a great question. That's the reason to show up on Sunday and to tune in from home, is to figure out the brand of how they look within whatever the outcome is. And that's one of the reasons why I asked Matt about looking at that game from last year, because in his answer, which was a little more elaborate than was clipped right there, was that he didn't want to get into some of the specifics because obviously they feel like they can scheme the Lions into some of these big chunk plays. Well, let's see it, right? I mean, let's see it. Let's see if they get guys open, number one, and if number two, Mitch can find them, and number three, can he hit them in stride to get yards after the catch? And then, we'll be talking this time next week and say, okay, do it again against the Rams on the road in prime time, right? I mean, the challenges get harder from here, but to lower the degree of difficulty, that was the case against the Chargers. They did not clear the bar, and here they get another chance this week.
Two more things for me, Rich. Mike Davis, 20 minutes ago, just tweeted a wide-eyed, flushed face emoji. And now part of analyzing sports is to understand the millennial athlete and what their emoticons mean. Do we think he's been cut, and do we know definitively that if he is cut, the Bears get a draft pick? Because I know that that's pretty convoluted.
No, I don't know definitively if he has. If he has been, then we'll find out very soon. The NFL transactions wire was due at 3 o'clock, and that gets dispersed here in a little bit. So I have a hard time. Personally, I am not on the edge of my seat waiting for this to happen one way or the other this week. Let's just put it that way. If he is cut, then the Bears are convinced that it will positively affect the compensation pick formula, which, as you guys know, is a secret. The league keeps it a secret,
right,
even from teams. There is guesswork involved here. So this idea that they'll definitely get a fourth-round pick, you can't say that. I think the only thing I'm comfortable saying is that it would help their formula. Does it mean it crosses a threshold to get any of the 32 compensation picks? We have to wait till late March at the owners' meetings to find out, as I think when they announce it. But I am not on the edge of my seat about this. You guys know what a fourth round pick can be. It can be anything from all pro safety Eddie Jackson to here for 2 years and gone Jeremy Langford. So anywhere in between, that's where that fourth round pick can fall. And obviously the Bears at this point, who are not getting anything out of Mike Davis offensively, if they feel like it gets them that, you know, so much closer to a pick, then you just cut them, you eat the guaranteed money, and it's the same effect as paying for an extra draft pick, which you know the Bears would do in a heartbeat.
It's so incredibly obvious that they run the ball better with Mitch under center, whether it's the eye, the offset eye, single setback, whatever. And they've done that the last 2 weeks, and then, whoa, play action and shots downfield. Hey, look at that this past week. How much has that been discussed, and will we see more of it this week?
Yeah, it is obvious in a way that is almost... I don't want to say sad, but you're sitting here watching
pathetic.
This and going, wait, there has to be something more to this, right? Like, it can't be this simple. It can't. Now, you know, what's the saying? Like, football, it's football. It's not brain surgery. But, you know, there's just no reason to overthink it. I think if you look at, you know, some of the positive moments Mitch has had from the time he was developing, you know, when he was first a rookie and he was playing a lot more under center, that you can tell, and the 53-yarder to Gabriel against the Eagles is a perfect example of this, that when you're under center and you can run that keeper game and get outside of the pocket and change the passing point, they created space and time for him. They created time for routes to develop down the field. And it's just something they can build off of, run to pass and stack that type of play calling sequencing that gets them into a rhythm that I feel like we haven't seen enough of, where you can recognize the intentions of the way one play sets up another or one concept sets up another. And this to me is one of the biggest, most important questions of the second half of the season. Is it's like, okay, Matt Nagy, you've got this data. It's 8 games of really lousy data. What do you do with it? I mean, if they get to the end of the season, and let's say their offense is a little bit more based out of under center, and it is unlocking Mitch a little bit, I think we'll be having different tones in our conversations about what they're capable of, Nagy's ability to manage a losing situation, how they might grow from it, instead of this boat is just headed to the bottom of the ocean in shards. You know, that's why we can still tune in, even if the playoffs are out of reach for them, to learn a little bit about the coach, the play caller, the offensive designer. And so far, you know, I think the results would say Nagy hasn't done well enough, but we're starting to maybe see a sign here or there. The eye formation, this thing you're talking about, under center, and maybe the play action game. Maybe, you know, at a very slow pace, they're going in the right direction. We'll have to see.
Rich Gamble covers the Bears for the Tribune with us every week at this time on the McNeil and Parkin Show. Thank you, Rich.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoy the game this weekend.
We'll try. This segment brought to you by Fogo de Chão and Brazilian Steakhouse. For a limited time, enjoy the best of Brazil for just $39 at Fogo de Chão and Brazilian Steakhouse. Enjoy Brazilian cuts like prime lamb steak and picanha sirloin, traditional sides, and the extensive market table for $39 in Chicago, Rosemont, or Naperville. Reservations at fogo.com. You know, there's a whole other NFL out there. There's the whole rest of the league.
There sure is.
It doesn't involve depressing Bears football. You want to talk about that? and how we could maybe learn things about the rest of the league to the Bears?
There's all kinds of stuff. Let me throw this at you as we go to break then. Of all the quarterbacks in NFL history with 40,000 yards passing, only one of them doesn't have a playoff win.
I know the answer.
Figured you would.
I know the answer. We'll discuss it coming up. McNeil and Parkinson speaks in on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Cat is in the CDW red zone. CDW, people who get it now, a policeman, a state trooper has come on the field, and the cat runs into the end zone. That is a touchdown.
Kevin Harlan on Westwood One. That capped week 9 of the NFL.
Yeah, it's fitting in the sponsorship as Chris Tannehill appropriately pulled that cut that really separates that call from other black cat calls I've heard in my life.
Harlan is among the best.
Unreal.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program is presented by Kia. Go to ChicagoWolves.com/youth hockey to learn how to get your team on the ice to play during intermission of a Wolves game. We are winners. We are the Wolves. Ask your NFL trivia question again.
Of all the quarterbacks in NFL history with 40,000 passing yards or more, only one of them does not have a playoff win. Drew Brees is the leader at 75,000 yards. That's a lot. And, you know, all the usual guys, Brady, Manning, Favre, Marino. And you got to go down. And when you pass this guy, you get to Kerry Collins, Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, Joe Flacco. They have playoff wins. But who has 41,025 yards and no playoff win?
That would be Matt Stafford, the Bears' opponent this Sunday.
Every year, they're the same. Every year, I'm like, wow, Stafford can really throw it. Right now, he's got two great wideouts. Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones might be the best wide receiver duo in the NFL.
I don't think they're that, but they're really good.
They're really good. Did you watch much of that last week? Their game against it was the Raiders, right? That was last week.
Do me a favor and go back and watch that Colts game.
Yep, you check out the Colts game.
Marvin Jones, I mean, Golladay is like, you know, a classic big-bodied guy who's gotten better as a route runner. Marvin Jones is a great route runner, fast as hell, with incredibly strong hands, made a bunch of difficult catches. I mean, they're really good.
They're really good. There's a lot of receivers in the NFL. I mean, it's kind of like point guard in the NBA. It's a really deep position. I mean, you got Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley in Atlanta. You got Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen in Minnesota. You got Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry in Cleveland. They're not able to be unleashed because Baker Mayfield stinks.
Did you see where Odell Beckham ranks on red zone targets on that team? He's like 7th. In red zone targets on that team.
Their coach is a moron. Like, Freddie Kitchens is going to be fired after one season. It is indefensible to trade what they traded for Odell Beckham and then not use him more and target him 4 or 5 times in a game. It's absolutely lunatic.
All right, how about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin?
That would also be one of the ones that I would put up there. But I mean, listen, Galladay's great.
They might be better.
Okay. Yeah, Galladay's great. And Marvin Jones is very good.
And underrated.
Yes.
But anyway, point being about the 40,000 yards thing is that they're the same every year. Stafford can throw, can put up huge numbers. They just can't figure out a way to run the ball, said the last 8 years. And the defense isn't good enough. Same thing.
It is the same thing. They're kind of like the NFC Chargers, where like it's every single week it feels like Philip Rivers is down 6 with the ball on his own 25-yard line with one timeout. And it's like, let's see if he can do this. And at the end of the year, they're 9-7 because they had devastating injuries and kicker problems, but they've got a great quarterback. I think that they're the NFC version of the Chargers. Matt Stafford also, fastest quarterback in NFL history to 40,000 passing yards.
That makes sense. As I look at this list, everybody else is pretty much an old head.
Yeah. Well, he did it in four games quicker than Matt Ryan, I believe.
Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers would be the two that he might contend with.
That are active, yeah. And Peyton Manning did it very quickly also.
You have to go down the list. Past Joe Flacco is the last 40,000-yarder right now. Dave Craig at 23, 38,000 yards. He's got a playoff win. Boomer Esiason, Donovan McNabb, Matt Hasselbeck, Jim Kelly, Jay Cutler has a playoff win, right?
Yeah.
Jim Everett.
Jay Cutler very much has a playoff
win. Jim Everett has a playoff win. You have to get to number 30, Jim Hart, before you find another guy on this list who doesn't have a playoff win.
It's crazy, man.
It's not happening this year either for Matt.
No, it's not, but they are not terrible, right? If you are a Lions fan and you've been watching every game this year,
yeah,
you can say that they had the Packers game stolen from them by the refs.
Yeah.
You could say that first game where they blew the fourth quarter lead to the Cardinals should have been a win, and it ended up being a tie. They could be two or three games better very, very easily this season. They are not a terrible team. I do not believe that they should be an underdog in this game.
No, it doesn't really register with what we've watched.
It should be like Lions by one or two. Like they shouldn't be a big favorite, and instead they're a 2.5-3 point underdog just because the game is here. And I know the Lions defense is bad and the Bears offense is bad, and Len Casper was on with us talking about the terrible nature of being a Lions fan yesterday to promote that event at Space that we should talk about with you in a second here.
Yes.
But he was saying basically it's a matchup of strength and weakness and weakness. Bears defense good, Lions offense good. Bears offense bad, Lions defense bad. So which weakness can exploit the other one is maybe how this game will come out.
Yeah, understood.
I bet against Mitch Trubisky. Personally.
That would be safe. And then, you know, I've been Russell Wilson for the MVP. That's where I've been conversationally. I think we talked about it a while back. I'm still there after, what, 5 touchdown passes the other day? He's got 22 touchdowns and 1 interception on the year. He's number 1 in touchdowns, number 1 in rating, number 3 in yards for a 7-2 team.
Yes, and the defense is not good,
right.
So he is the reason for it. He's elevating, you know, Metcalf and Chark, and Tyler Lockett is turning into one of the great receivers in the game.
He really is. 13 catches the other day. But there's one quarterback in the history of the NFL who threw the first 8 games of a season has over 1,800 passing yards and 600 rushing yards, and that's Lamar Jackson. Nobody's ever had these numbers.
Yeah,
Mike Vick never had these numbers. You know, you can go back as far as you want. Steve Young, whatever.
I was talking to Jeff Schwartz.
Oh, my God.
Who is a useful guy. We'll get him on this show soon, but he... He played for, you know, Eli Manning. He was a guard in the NFL. His brother's Mitchell Schwartz, who's the right tackle on the Chiefs, who's an all-pro. He was a journeyman guard out of Oregon, 7th-round pick, but he played for 8 years. He was with the Giants. He was with the Panthers with Cam Newton. He was with the Chiefs with Alex Smith.
Yeah.
And he's a really smart, analytical guy. He did some stuff, actually, on Trubisky today on Twitter with some film breakdowns. And I asked him who he thought the MVP was, and he said, this happens every year, but if you actually do it based on the true definition of value,
uh-huh,
he says it's Lamar Jackson.
Because I see it.
He is the offense, and they built the offense for him. Like, if you took Lamar Jackson out and put in any other quarterback,
it's a different
animal. They couldn't run the offense that they're running.
Well, and this was always true for Vic when Warrick Dunn was there in Atlanta with him, is that, you know, the threat of bootleg or the quarterback running spreads things out so wide that when Warrick Dunn goes the other way, or in this case Mark Ingram or Gus Edwards, the holes are wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, they're number 2 in total yards per game. Number 2, the Ravens are. They're number 1 in points per game. It's amazing. And that's Greg Roman again, man. That dude, what he did with Kaepernick and Harbaugh in San Francisco, and what he's doing there with really talented mobile quarterbacks, he's a wizard.
John Harbaugh is an awesome football coach also. He is so smart.
Versatile.
Prepared, versatile.
Think about how many different styles they've played and won with.
Yep. And he has a full analytics department. So, like, in-game, you see it. Watch it. He goes for it on fourth down. He is more likely to go for 2 early, correctly. Mm. And he's like, I don't ignore my gut, but I also don't ignore math. And I saw someone on Twitter, I forgot what the context of it was, but they said we should not call it analytics. I think it, maybe it was Carlos Beltran.
Information.
So we should just call analytics information.
I loved it. Yes.
And people would not be so defensive yes. about the idea of analytics.
Every time my beloved partner, Bruce Levine, on Inside the Clubhouse on Saturday morning brings up math of any kind,
yeah.
says, you know, these metrics teams, and he has a grumble to it. And every time I'm like, you know, it's just knowledge. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And I'll say it to Bruce on the air, so I have no problem saying it here on the air. But there's Carlos Beltran. I prefer to call it information. That's all it is.
Just information. And it doesn't mean you have to be 100% beholden to it.
No.
Just if you go against it, be sure you have a good explanation as to why.
Dumbass sabermetric crap.
That's right.
And if your information that you use against it is, I watched this guy play and I saw that he's prone to this. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Right. It doesn't have
to. I'm okay with that. You might be right.
It doesn't have to be absolute. It can be, I know I had this play call. Bill Belichick, actually, one of the smartest coaches who's always been using this advanced game theory stuff. You go back, he's got one of the more famous examples when he went for it at his own 30-yard line against Peyton Manning and the Colts back in like 2008. Super controversial decision at the time. He kicked the field goal Sunday night against the Ravens, down 17-10 before the first half, kicks the field goal to go to 17-13, and he said, it just felt like the thing to do at the time because of momentum. And the analytics community in the football world, the Bill Barnwells of the world, were like, oh, it hurts my soul. And I was like, well, no. He knows, like, cognitively.
We need some points.
That there's a high, well, but he knows that the math probably says that a touchdown from the 1 yard
sure.
line is, you should go for it, and that's worth the risk of getting stuffed and losing out on the 3 points because you have the opportunity to gain the seven.
But he knew his vaunted defense was getting their ass kicked by Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and he went with his gut and he said, it feels like we just need another positive play heading into half. Now, he ended up being wrong and they got blown out by 17, and it would not have mattered whether they got the touchdown and the field goal. But like,
yeah.
There's Bill Belichick, the best football coach ever, going against the analytics or the information.
Right. And remember, he was the poster boy for it when he onside kicked, right?
With yeah.
Against Peyton Manning.
Well,
no,
he,
what was it? He
went,
let him score.
Peyton, no, he it was.
They went for it. They went for it on fourth down.
Mac is here in spirit. That's what I just said. That's what I just said. Yes, he went for
right.
2008. It was yeah. against the Colts. He was on his own 30-yard line.
Do you guys remember that Sunday night game probably like 10 or 11 years ago? Belichick and the Colts. I wanted to keep the ball out of Manning's hand or
damn
something.
Damn it.
I swear to
show.
God, I'm not just talking over here. Like, I think we're
Wait,
having conversations.
Is there someone else in the room?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, my own thoughts are here. For your buddy Jeff Schwartz's MVP argument, Lamar Jackson has outplayed Russell Wilson and Tom Brady in separate games and beaten them. So
if you, yeah, that's not bad.
Add that in.
I'm with you.
As I make a point to obfuscate from the fact that I wasn't listening.
It's totally fine. I would vote for Russell Wilson also, but if I could pay to watch one player right now, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, it's a really good time to be a young quarterback in the NFL.
The fastest click, other than Mitch,
yeah.
The fastest click that I did all week on the internet was on Monday morning. Watch all of Lamar Jackson's best plays. Yes, I will. Thank you.
It's very singular. There's no one else playing the position that way.
I forget who called him that. I think it was somebody on Seattle. It was Bobby Wagner called him. He's one of one right now. He's one of one.
I don't think there's ever been a player, at least not in recent memory, that I'm so happy to be so wrong about coming out of college.
Lamar?
Just like he's exciting as hell. I have no idea if he's ever going to be able to throw at an NFL level. Don't know if he's just going to be kind of the gimmicky run and hit wide open receivers guy.
But he is as
he
exciting
is
and electrifying.
Exciting player as there is in the league right now.
Would you like to tell me the four quarterbacks who went before him in that draft in round one?
Would have been last year's draft.
It was the 2018
draft.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Right. So that is Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
That is
Sam Darnold.
You forget so quickly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam
okay.
Darnold.
Sam Darnold.
Josh Rosen.
Oh, God.
Oh boy.
Sorry, Josh.
And Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Those are the four who went before Lamar Jackson.
And Josh Allen's the only one that you'd even consider at this point, yeah, right?
And you wouldn't.
You wouldn't. But it'd be
Yeah.
Like, yes.
But yes, he's the only one who their team
he's
doesn't hate that they have him.
Discussion, yes.
Yeah. This hour on the score brought to you by CarX. Save up to $200 on four tires installed at CarX. There's a 1 year ago today Chicago sports anniversary that maybe we want to do over on just 1 year later. We're going to celebrate it next on the score.
Not to interrupt you, Dave, but yes. We have breaking news
Speaking of jobs,
the Chicago Blackhawks have fired Joel Quenneville. The Chicago Blackhawks have relieved Joel Quenneville of his coaching duties and have named Jeremy Colleton the 38th head coach in franchise history.
How many games into the season are they?
We're probably 15 games into this regular season.
They're on a five-game losing streak.
They're on a five-game losing streak. This is a stunner. I think it's a stunner.
You know what's interesting, and I ran into a – we're at the Dolphins, and I'm going to relate to this, and I don't know what happened here. We don't know. Obviously, I'll find out, or you guys will find out. What am I saying? I'll find out. But come back to us.
Please call and tell us, Dave.
But this is my point. Obviously, I'll find out, or you guys will find out. What am I saying? I'll find out.
1 year ago today, Dave Wanstead in studio as the news breaks that Joel Quenneville has been fired as the coach of the Blackhawks. Unbelievable moment on this radio station where Wanny's like, I'll take care of it. I'll find out. It'll be fine.
That's the best. I love cross sport stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, it's fantastic.
We used to have the tape somewhere of Ed Farmer breaking the news that Phil Jackson was not going to be coming back to the Bulls in the middle of a Luis Valbuena at bat.
Oh, nice. It was nice bull.
Do you remember that, Tanny? It was Indians, White Sox, and
yeah, Farmer's like, inconsequential May baseball between Sox and Indians.
Let me tell you, folks, I've been hearing that that Phil Jackson might come back. It's not going to happen. I got that from a good source. As high as you can be. 2-1 count to Valbuena.
It's incredible.
That's the best.
We also had, when Wani was hosting and at the 5-5, they asked him a question about David Bodie. He was like, all right, you guys want me to talk about this? Thought he was just there for the football. Uh-huh. But so that is 1 year ago today that Joel Quenneville fired by the Hawks, Colleton named, and then today.
The Hawks?
Yeah. Yeah, the Hawks.
Here's the headline at 670thescore.com.
From my friend and yours, Jay Zawoski.
Lifeless Blackhawks need to fire Colleton.
Man!
He's calling it.
Let's hear how he defends it.
It's one thing to be a bad team. It's one thing to not be able to score. It's one thing to just not have the talent. They're non-competitive against bad teams. The San Jose Sharks last night skated circles around them for 50 minutes. The Hawks were outshot 26-8 through the first two periods. And you could say, okay, well, you know, bad game. San Jose had lost five games in a row. And they looked like the Harlem Dam Globetrotters against the Blackhawks last night. And I've never been a fire the coach guy. I still love Lovie Smith. I'm still pissed Joe Maddon's gone. I'm like the last guy to quit on a coach ever. But this team, it's not working with Jeremy Colleton. He's a smart guy. I think he knows the game. But to put him in to replace the guy he did with the roster he has, it's an impossible situation for him to succeed, and it's been a disaster. And to me, it looks like the team has either tuned him out completely or just they don't understand his system. They look completely lost on the ice, and Jonathan Toews is struggling, and Patrick Kane is struggling. All these veteran guys who are renowned as some of the smartest guys in hockey and some of the best leaders in the game, et cetera, et cetera. If they're not getting it, if they look this bad, something is very, very, very wrong, and I think it's time. This is the one-year anniversary of the Joel Quenneville firing, and it's time. They have to fire Colleton. There's no other option here.
Wow.
Jay Zawoski from the top rope calling for a firing. I like it. Follow his podcast, man. That guy is Mr. Hockey, and I will say this.
I know why you like it.
Because I steal his hockey thoughts,
yes.
So now I agree. Fire, yes. Colleton.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever, that's a hot take.
Well,
I'm going to go on TV and say it.
Let me back
up. It'll be real, Jay.
It's crazy on the station how everyone just kind of echoes Zawoski's hockey thoughts. How that just kind of comes across.
Sure. Yeah.
I prefer the team borrow his hockey thoughts.
Yeah, we'll borrow his thoughts.
Appropriate, maybe.
Yeah.
Or steal, if you'd like.
Well, sure. I credit him off the air.
Uh-huh. Amplify is a good one.
Amplifies. Let me amplify. Let me paraphrase and amplify.
I'm going to book myself on Sports Talk Live and call for Colleton's firing.
Let me tell you this. I am looking at data from 2016. The average tenure for coaches and managers in the four major sports in the NHL is the shortest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they fire coaches all the time.
Biggest turnover.
And I knew that.
And Jay's got a replacement. Mark Crawford is the assistant. He's right there. Go ahead. Damon, the interim coach.
Read Jay Zawoski's Hawks column at 670thescore.com. Listen to him with Bernstein and McKnight, the Madhouse Hockey Podcast, Locked on Hawks, the whole thing. Follow him, Jay Zawoski, 670. And then you, too, can steal his hockey thoughts.
Amplify. Paraphrase.
What's your music situation tonight and going forward?
I got a roll. I'm late for sound check. Tributosaurus over at Martyrs tonight, performing the music of The Cars in honor of the late, great Rick Ocasek and Ben Orr. Oh, my, so many good songs. So we're doing The Cars tonight. And then this Friday at Wire in Berwyn, also doing The Cars. I think tonight's sold out, but Friday is not. So come hang out.
Spiegs, thanks for hanging out for 3 hours, buddy. I appreciate you.
Pleasure. Thank you, everybody. And congratulations on the birth of your little show content.
We will talk about Shep becoming a dad, Mitch Trubisky's potential head explosion, and my theory on what Jim Boylan meant last night. All coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.